Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Market Circle, the makers of Daylight. If you're struggling to balance your caseload and bring in new clients, I urge you to give Daylight a try. It transforms the way you manage your day-to-day and can save you hours each week. I've been using Daylight, as you know, for years to manage clients and cases. It's also the Mac CRM that my good friend Victor Medina's law firm uses as well. There's a new team view in Daylight that helps you see what everyone in your firm is working on all in one cohesive view. If you're interested in trying out Daylight, visit marketcircle.com/daylight to start a free 30-day trial. And be sure to let them know you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. This episode is also brought to you by my friends at Spotlight Branding. I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They built a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to keep me top of mind with my referral network. Visit spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur. spotlightbranding.com/TLE, brought to you by our friends at Spotlight Branding. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 63 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyra, your host as always. And first, I have an apology to offer. Last week, we didn't have a show, and that's principally because I didn't get my act together in time enough to get one done. If you've been paying attention to the podcast 60, 61, 62 or so, I had a lingering illness I lovingly refer to as the bubonic plague, but I think it was really just bronchitis coupled with severe allergy issues that I just could not kick, and it finally caught up with me. And that, coupled with traveling to the West Coast to see my daughter in her show, The Sister Act, in Thousand Oaks, which was a smash success, I just literally ran out of time and didn't have something to offer last week. So I apologize for not letting folks know about that. I've had a couple of people who called to say, hey, what happened to the podcast? Did I miss something? Nope. I was just lame. So try not to let that happen again too often. But anyway, with episode 63 here today, I am delighted to have Joran Jenkins as my guest today. This is, I'm just going to say, a brilliant woman. Just empirically, and as you'll hear on the podcast, from a practical standpoint as well, went to Yale undergrad as a teenager, you know, so that says something. Graduated from Georgetown University, again, Georgetown University Law, again, not a slouch school by any means, and is currently residing in Tampa, Florida. And you're going to hear in this interview that she has got a lot of stuff going on. I mean, she is a very successful attorney in the Tampa area, focusing primarily on the collaborative divorce process, or the collaborative process in general, applied to not just domestic cases, but also to civil and estate cases that warrant such a treatment. So the collaborative process is her bailiwick, and she's written about it. She lectures about it, and she's widely known as a real authority in that area. So you're going to hear her talk about her practice and about the number of books that she's written on just the whole arc of her career, principally with respect to her domestic cases. And she's a very accomplished coach and trainer, traveling around the country, offering seminars and training opportunities in these different areas of collaborative process and marketing for attorneys and small solo firms. So you'll hear her talk about her approach to marketing is that pitch, publish, present, profile, and partner. I like that, five P's in a row. Pitch, publish, present, profile, and partner. So I was delighted to have Joran on the show today, and hopefully you'll get as much out of it as I did. And so here we go, Joran Jenkins. Joran Jenkins, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Well, thank you very much.
I appreciate you taking the time to be with us today. Joran, tell our audience a little bit about yourself, how you came to be where you are today, and what makes you special.
Well, you should have asked my mother, not me. So the name is Joran. It's a made-up name, according to my mother, most of the time. I never graduated from high school. I went to Yale when I was 16 years old. I graduated when I was 19.
Oh, so a slacker from the beginning.
Yeah, well, you know, it depends on how you look at it. I was just victim of a succession of wonderful happenings. Let's put it that way. And I apparently am pretty good at taking advantage of wonderful things when they are offered to me. So I graduated from Georgetown when I was 23 and opened my practice. Actually, I didn't open my practice. I went to work for one of those big 10 law firms in 1980 in Washington, D.C. and stayed there for a while and then came down to Florida where I could be near my great aunt and the son and went to work for the state attorney because I really wanted to get into court.
And then?
Oh, my God. Neil. Okay, so an interesting fact about my practice, I suppose, is that I have been a government attorney, I have been a big firm attorney, I've been a medium-sized firm attorney, a small firm attorney, I've been a law school professor full-time, and I opened my own practice. So I've got all of that kind of varied experience. I started out doing agency and administrative type work, and then started doing employment discrimination, and I hated that. And then I went to work for one of my clients, actually. I did a six-month stint defending employment sex discrimination cases, handled 50 of those. We did them in arbitration, and I won 48 of them. So that was pretty good. And then I came to work for the state attorney.
And ultimately, you decided that you were going to go out on your own and become a solo practitioner. Was that always in the back of your mind, or is that something that intrigued you, or were there circumstances that drove you to it?
Well, you know, there are both types out there. And if I understand correctly, you went to law school and you knew that you were going to open your own law firm.
Pretty much so, yeah.
Yeah, not me. The thing is that I went to law school because I graduated from Yale with an English degree when I was 19, and I didn't want to teach grammar school. So what else are you going to do? My stepfather said, go to law school. It's a great education, and I'm sure one of them will accept you. So I got into Georgetown. I wanted to go to Georgetown because it's in the capital, and I wanted to see how politics work.
Were you from this area originally?
I'm from California and New York.
Oh, so?
A little bit of both.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and I went to school in New Haven. And, you know, so I had been around by then. We'd moved around quite a bit. So that's, you know, Georgetown. It was a great experience. Yale was a wonderful experience. And practicing law was never part of my plan. I went to law school and I'm halfway through law school and I'm going, this is pretty neat. I was very blessed when I was working for a very small criminal defense firm. I was just a law clerk, and we were representing the Teamsters Pension Fund and the Pipefitters Pension Fund. They were defending the cases. They were RICO cases. And these lawyers took me with them to the trial in Las Vegas. And I got to sit in on the trial and, you know, help them with the paperwork. And I just had an amazing experience. It was wonderful.
Wow, that's a pretty impressive way to cut your teeth in the litigation environment.
Well, yeah. And then you find, and you know, you go, oh, this is way neat. And then you go to work for a really big firm and you're just a cog in the macrocosm. And you're like, oh, well, maybe not so much.
What about that courtroom experience that I just had in Vegas? When do I get to do that in this big firm?
Right. That's why you go to work for a state attorney. And I tell kids this all the time because I mentor. And if you can get a job coming out of law school, it doesn't pay well, but go to work for a state attorney or a DA or a public defender or one of those agencies where you're going to be thrown into court because that's what they have to do. You have to go to court.
Yeah, for those people who want to have that litigation experience, you can't beat that. I know listeners have been bored with my story on many occasions, but I did all my internships at the state's attorney's office for just that reason. I like the action, the hustle and bustle of being in court.
It's not just that. It gives you the self-confidence.
Yeah, and the skill set, you know, that because as most of us know, even coming out of law school, if you aspire to be a litigator, you can get some trial experience in, you know, the trial practices classes and maybe some of the clinics. But there's no substitute for being in the courtroom day in and day out.
Neil, you need to remember, I'm talking 30 years ago. Well, actually, I'm talking 37 years ago. And they didn't have, the only school I think in 1980 teaching trial practice was probably Stetson University College of Law. They were the first. And it's been years and years, but they, you know, we didn't learn it at Georgetown. It wasn't one of the course offerings as far as I recall.
So basically it really is a mentor kind of apprentice program to learn the ins and outs of litigating.
That's exactly right. You nailed it. Apprentice. Just like Lincoln.
Yeah. So then when you decided that you were going to relocate to the Sunshine State and pursue glory as a solo, did you have a practice area that you were focusing in on, or were you looking at that as an opportunity to maybe do something a little different?
So I was at the state attorney's office. Then I went to a small firm boutique and I was doing commercial litigation. When I was there, nobody else wanted to do the occasional bankruptcy case, so I would take that on, and I learned to do bankruptcy work. No one else wanted to do the occasional appeal, and I was blessed, again, when I was working for the state, with my first appeal, and in that appeal, I made new law, which would be too complicated to explain, but I made law that had never been made anywhere in the United States, and other states followed suit when they saw the opinion that the judge rendered in our case.
A nice start.
that's addictive. Mm-hmm. You make new law and you go, wow.
I'd like to do that again.
Yeah, I'd love to do. So I started doing the appeals in this small firm. I was there for 5 years. I got passed over for promotion several times because I was one of the two females in the firm. And so I went to a bigger firm and I was put in charge of the bankruptcy division. But Stetson came courting me and they convinced me to come teach trial practice because I had all the trial practice experience. So I went and I taught trial practice and I taught bankruptcy and I taught appellate practice. And while I was there, I had the opportunity to take a case to the Florida Supreme Court, which I won, and I made new law nationwide. I realized that I really missed practicing. And that's when, again, this was not an active decision that I made. I just didn't consider applying for a job anywhere. I just hung my own shingle. And I'm not saying that that's an intelligent decision. By any means am I not saying that. What I did do that was smart was I found a mentor, and I still bless him to this day for sitting me down and giving me his list of contacts to legal malpractice insurance carriers and, you know, the other business insurance carrier. And I never would have known that I needed business insurance. I never would have known half the things he told me. So he sat me down, he gave me all that information, and I went and rented an office somewhere. In the first 6 months, I did everything myself.
Well, you know, a lot of folks find themselves in that position that all of a sudden they look up and they've created a law firm and they're not really sure how that came to be, or now they have to make it work. So you got the space, and like a lot of folks, you wore every hat in the law firm. What was your biggest challenge in those days?
Oh, I think my biggest challenge was going home. I just didn't want to go home. I was just so happy. I loved calling judges' assistants and talking to them about scheduling hearings. And I loved drafting, and I loved talking to clients. And I just loved every aspect of what I was doing. I loved looking for that case where I could make new law. Back then, this is 24 years ago, back then, I don't think that I really appreciated that every time we make new law, someone has to pay us to do that. And there are clients out there who can't afford that, where, you know, it would benefit everybody if we could take their case up on appeal and go the whole route to make new law. But I was blessed because I did have many clients who could afford it. I had one client who could not, and I took the case anyway because we both knew that it was important and I wanted to do it. So the hardest thing for me was going home. I mean, I got married right in that time period, and I took on a stepdaughter who is a jewel.
So you are a glutton for punishment.
Oh, God, and she's redheaded. So I had the redheaded stepchild.
Literally.
Yeah, she was lovely.
So this is a little while ago. How did you go about acquiring clients in those days? What did you do to market your firm?
You know, it's funny because in theory, I might not remember the answer to that question because we're talking 24, 22 years ago. Interestingly, the ABA did an issue in their journal magazine on marketing, and I was the star of the article. And so I have a copy of that article framed in my office, and it talks about the fact that I basically just called other lawyers. Can't do it that way anymore. But I had all of my commercial friends. I had all of my bankruptcy friends. I had all of my appellate friends. I belong to all those different sections. They would send me their family law cases. So now keep in mind, I was doing what I called ABCDE. I was doing appeals, bankruptcy, commercial litigation, domestic, which is family, and ethics, which is really legal malpractice. I was covering those five areas.
That's a wide spread of disciplines.
Well, I had, at that point, I had experience in four of those areas because I'd done a little legal mal and I'd been doing the commercial and the bankruptcy and the appellate. And I found that all of my contacts would absolutely send me the family law cases because none of them wanted to do them. So I had to expand into that area, and I developed a reputation for, and this is 24 years ago, getting men custody. The reason that I got that reputation is completely irrelevant, if you will. The reason was because my husband, the guy that I married, happened to have custody of his daughter.
Sure.
Which I had nothing to do with. But I had this reputation. And so, you know, the female clients would come to me because we connect and, you know, I do divorce work and they would want a female lawyer. And back in the day, there weren't that many. The men would come to me because I had this reputation that I, you know, came out of nowhere. So
tell us about your practice now. Are you still an ABCDE practitioner, or are you kind of narrowing down into a more specific area?
Well, so what's happened is over time, and we've all seen the market, what the market's been doing. And, you know, we saw 2009, and down here, we felt the effects of the oil spill, and all of that impacts on our practices, even if we don't know it. And so over time, I discovered that I was doing more and more family work and less of everything else, even though we also all know that the big firms have started doing family law. You know, most big firms got tired of giving away work, and so they all have their own departments of doing that. But they still suffer from conflicts of interest, which they used to do in the old days, and they still do even in family law. So we still get those referrals. But other changes that have happened over time, collaborative divorce has become a thing. And I've done some collaborative divorce work, and I've discovered that I have a knack for it, and I really love it. And as I became more and more aware that it's harder and harder to make new law, and it's harder and harder to find clients who are willing to pay you to make new law, it's become easier and easier to find divorcing clients who really, really want to focus on family first and protect their relationships. And so they're willing to go the collaborative divorce route. So I'm doing a lot of courtless work, even though my background is completely trial. You know, I was that, what do we call them? Aggressive female trial attorneys in the day. That's what we used to call people like me.
Yeah, that's the broader technical polite term. This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Market Circle, the makers of Daylight. Do you want to help more clients but don't have the resources? Do you feel overwhelmed by the amount of work to do that you can't even think about getting new clients? If this is you, I urge you to try out Daylight. Daylight is the Mac CRM that streamlines your practice and can save you hours of work each week. Daylight has helped thousands of small businesses, including my own, to manage more clients and cases without adding stress nor chaos. With Daylight, you don't need to fumble through files or notes to know where you are in a case. There's no more CCing your assistant on emails or passing around spreadsheets. Because Daylight now has a new team view that helps you see what everyone in your firm is working on. You can see everyone's appointments and tasks and easily schedule meetings for the entire team or a portion thereof. To learn how Daylight can help your firm, visit marketcircle.com/daylight. Be sure to let them know you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. That's Market Circle, the makers of Daylight. In addition, I want to tell you about my friends at Spotlight Branding. I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They build a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to keep me top of mind with my referral network. And this helps me generate more referrals and more business for my firm. Their services are designed to help lawyers get better results out of the resources they're already investing into marketing and business development. They create an internet foundation that makes all of your marketing work better. That's because these days, almost every potential client is going to check out your web presence before they hire you. It's important that you create a strong first impression. And that's what Spotlight Branding has done for me, and they can do it for you too. So visit spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for our podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE. For our audience who maybe aren't aware about what the collaborative process is, can you kind of touch on that in a nutshell? I know we probably could do a whole show on collaborative law, but in terms of family law, let's limit it to family law. What's the basic premise of the collaborative process?
Well, actually, we can apply it to any area where there's a relationship. So where a relationship is going to be dissolved. And obviously, you have the divorce, which is dissolution of marriage, but you have partnership dissolutions, you've got small subchapter S corporations, you've got family corporations, you've got probate situations. Wherever there's a relationship to be dissolved, it can be dissolved collaboratively. Collaboratively is where the attorneys on the case sign an agreement that they will not go to court. So if the clients give up on this dispute resolution process, they have to hire new lawyers. Now, most lawyers know very well that it's easy for a client to find a new lawyer, but the clients don't really, once they've established a relationship with you, they work harder to get this dispute resolution process to work than they would if they could just go to trial with you when they gave up. And the lawyers, we find, also work harder to make the process work than they would if they could just throw in the towel and go to trial. So the process ends up costing the clients a lot less money. It takes less time because you're not trying to schedule everything on a judge's calendar. We often will use, in the divorce arena, a facilitator or a coach or a mental health professional, some neutral third party to help the clients vocalize their needs and their concerns, communicate, help them with co-parenting issues. We often use a financial neutral to help often one of the parties deal with financial issues that they've never had to deal with before, budgeting issues, planning issues. So it's a much more family-friendly process. We get people divorced through a series of meetings. Either, you know, the wife is meeting with the financial person, or both of them are, or the husband is meeting with the facilitator, or both of them are, or they're meeting with their clients, or they're all meeting in one place together. And I've gotten these cases on average for $32,000. Now, for the small firm lawyer, what that translates to, at least in Tampa, Florida, is I make about $10,000 a case. And that compares to, for anyone who does divorce work, $100,000 if I go to trial. So that's a huge savings for the clients. And I will tell you that it's a huge savings in stress for me. I would rather do 10 of these collaborative cases than one go to trial case, even though I still get a real rush out of winning.
Yeah. Well, in my own family law practice, I've noted at times there is a pressure to go to litigation because it keeps the parties apart. You know, they can't talk to each other, or there's an effort on one side to exert, you know, the win or control over the other. And they find it easier just to litigate it, you know, stay apart and hide behind the attorneys. The collaborative process, by definition, you know, addresses that problem head on, does it not?
Yeah, they're talking. And I will tell you that even in my court cases, I have said to clients, and I'm not here to bash attorneys, but we all know the attorneys who stir the pot. And I have told clients, go talk to your wife. You know, don't talk to her directly. You are allowed. Some of them don't even realize that they're allowed to do that. But you are allowed, if she's willing to talk to you, and, you know, as long as there's no domestic violence involved, and even if there is, if you meet in a public place, you know, as long as it's not coercion or duress. So when I trust my client, I will tell them to talk to the other side and save some time, save some money. Instead of having me talk to her lawyer, then he talks to her, you're saving time and money by going direct to the source.
Well, what does your office environment look like these days? What's your staffing? You know, how do you handle this empire?
You know, it's funny because I've my practice is swollen and then it's shrunk, and I really respond to what I'm doing at any given time. So, and I think we can all look at the culture that we're living in too. So it changes. So at one point I had a staff of 9 people working for me. I had 3.5 attorneys. So I had 3 full-time attorneys and then one part-time attorney. I have a business manager, if you will. He handles all of my buying and selling and computer equipment and software. And he does all of that. And then I've got my personal assistant, and then we had 3 other clerical and scheduling and personal assistants in the office. Now I've got one personal assistant, one clerical assistant, the business operations guy still, and one associate. In addition, however, I've got 2 lawyers working part-time as independent contractors. I've got a social media gal who works probably 25% of the time with me. I've got a constant contact champion who spends probably 20% of her time working for me.
So you've outsourced a lot of the smaller pieces of the operational functioning of the office.
And I advocate that in the book that I and Liz Miller have coming out, From Lawyer to Law Firm, how to manage a successful law business. These days, we really do recommend that you outsource pretty much as you can. So many people are working from home. Why should you pay for them to park their cars? Why should they spend the money for gas? you know, if you can get the same product out of them, the same services out of them, and they save the time in the car, that kind of thing. So there are huge savings by outsourcing.
Yeah, we've touched upon that subject a number of times here on The Law Entrepreneur, and you're someone who can speak to that transition of opportunity that's occurred over the course of time. Because, you know, when you first started practicing, that wasn't a viable alternative. We didn't have the technology, we didn't have the bandwidth, we didn't have the means to use virtual assistants and part-time outsourced administrative aides. Now, the whole environment is set up to make that eminently possible. And we've seen, you know, number of guests on the show here who have almost and exclusively, if not almost, clearly an exclusive virtual office.
I have in my office space, I own my office building, and I have what I call ghost tenants. So a couple of years ago, when we started seeing this trend in the solopreneurs, I would have lawyers come to me and say, you know, I just want to use your conference room. Not even, I forget what they call them, where you rent a tiny, tiny office and then you get the use of the receptionist and all that. I forget what it's called. But they just want the use of the conference room. And so what I do is I rent that use out on a first come, first serve basis. And they know where to call and where to schedule and how to do that. And they pay me a minimal, but still it adds up, rent amount.
Sure. As my mother would say, it would keep you in beer and pretzels.
Yeah.
So you mentioned just briefly there, and I don't want to overlook this. Aside from all the other stuff that you're doing, you're running a law firm, you know, you're advocating on behalf of collaborative practice. You're an author. You've written a couple books coming out and a couple on the shelf. Talk to our audience a little bit about your products here, your authorship.
So one of the things that I've spent a lot of time focusing on the last 5 years is marketing. And the reason is because I realized that collaborative divorce was not taking off the way it should because people don't know it's out there. And so I decided, A, that I needed to get the word out that it exists, and B, that I needed to get the word out that I'm out here doing it. My firm is here. So I changed the name of my firm and I put together a marketing plan. That marketing plan is pitch, publish, present, profile, and partner. That's it in a nutshell. And I got my pitch down. I'm pitch perfect, not in the vocal range, but you know, I know my pitch. I can get your attention on an elevator in an instant, and I can spend half an hour spinning it for you, and you'll walk away convinced that you want to get married just so you can get divorced collaboratively. But the next part of that is publish. You have to publish. And it's funny because for years, my mother swore that I was going to be an author. And I said, you know, Mom, I wrote one book. It was very boring. It's called Florida. Let me see. I'm looking at it. Oh, it's on my bookshelf. Florida Civil Practice Motions. Yes, it's boring.
Ooh, stimulating title there.
Yeah, it was published by Lexis. It's been out of print for years. It was a three-ring binder book for those of you lawyers who've been practicing as long as I have. And so I wasn't interested in publishing, but then this collaborative thing came along and I thought, you know what? I've been saving all those war stories for so long. So I started writing them up and I discovered that I can write a chapter in my drive home using my Siri on my iPhone, dictating it to Siri.
Well, you anticipated my question because I was going to ask you, what is your writing process? So that there it is right there.
Well, that's in a nutshell. I mean, it's a lot more than that, but that's the simplest version of it. And what happened was I sat down to, and then of course I pulled the first 6 or 7 collaborative magic cases that I had, and I wrote those up, and I ended up with I actually ended up with 2 books worth of book. I wrote War or Peace, and I wrote I Never Saw My Father Again, because I just had too much stuff for one book, and I wanted a book that I could hand out like business cards, and that's War or Peace. It's only 168 pages long. Yep, 168 pages.
It's still good size though.
Yeah, it's not a piece of garbage.
It's not a pamphlet.
But it's inexpensive for me to print and to give away. And I give this book to folks who come to see me for a consultation. The second book in the series is I Never Saw My Father Again, and it's about more complex issues that happen in collaborative cases. And then I thought, you know, this book thing is kind of easy, so why don't I get everything together? I started a pro bono project here in town 4.5 years ago, and I threw all my stuff from that project into a book, and then I tied it all together with words, and then I ended up with a manual called A Free Divorce Handbook, How to Organize Your Own Pro Bono Collaborative Divorce Project. That was so easy that I ended up also writing Managing Your Collaborative Practice for Passion and Profit, and I followed on with Changing the Way the World Gets Divorced, which is the marketing book. So now I teach a training called Changing the Way the World Gets Divorced. It's a one-day training for collaborative professionals, and it's all about marketing your collaborative practice. And I started doing that, and I had lawyers coming who were not even divorce lawyers, much less collaborative. And they were saying to me, Joran, you've got to teach this to lawyers. Lawyers need to know this, not collaborative people, any kind of solo or small firm lawyer. So I've got a new book. It's basically the same material, but it's a different spin as Changing the Way the World Gets Divorced. It's called From Rookie to Rainmaker. And I'm teaching the same, the training by the same name to solo and small firm lawyers.
So, Where are all these books available? Are your most recent ones? Are they available on a website, or can we go to Amazon? Or
they're all on my website, of course, at openpalmlaw.com. I think I've got the store. I think it's just called the store, and you can find the books in there. They're also on Amazon. We're hoping you have to understand though the big books. I mean, Changing the Way the World Gets Divorced. This is going to blow your mind if you can picture it. It's 370 pages long, and it's 8x10.
Wow.
It's a big book. I had a lot to say. Yeah. But it's all pitch, publish, present, profile, and partner. And if you come to my training, you get the book for free. I mean, you have to pay $400 for the training. I'm going to give you the $150 book for free.
Yeah, so that's the Changing the Way the World Gets Divorced. Is that the one you're talking about?
Right. And also From Rookie to Rainmaker, you also get the book for free when you come to that training.
So how long have you been doing the trainings?
Year and a half.
Okay. Around the country or just in the Florida area?
I started out by doing, 1 hour or 90-minute presentations. But as my material got bigger, I realized that I started out by just teaching pitch. And then I added publish on that, and then it got too big for just 90 minutes. So I started doing the one-day trainings. I started in Florida, but I've moved elsewhere and done them elsewhere. This year I have a schedule that includes 10 states and one province.
Nice. Now, as I understand it, we're located here in the Washington, D.C. area. I understand that you have a training coming up in the Columbia, Maryland area, which is halfway between D.C. and Baltimore. Is that right?
Yeah, I'll be there next week, May 11 and May 12. On Thursday, the 11th, I'm teaching the collaborative professionals. And then on Friday the 12th, I'm teaching the solo and small firm lawyers.
And can our listeners go to your website and sign up for that? Or is there a special place to, if they want to take advantage of that?
They can email me. I'm joran@openpalmlaw.com, and I can send them the registration.
All right. And you and I can get together, and we'll include it in the show notes, because I'm going to include all the references to the books and your training. So our listeners will be able to go there. And if they're so inclined to come meet you up in Columbia on the 11th.
Oh, that would be fabulous.
That'd be wonderful. Well, Joran, listen, I'd love to chat with you further. I mean, I'd love to talk to you a little more about how you developed your training courses, the process that you went through to do that. I'd love to pick your brain a little more about writing your books. So can I call on you to come back and visit us on another occasion?
Oh, I would love that. Yeah, I think you may have noticed that all you have to do is press my on button, and then getting me to stop is not that easy.
Well, you and I have the same challenges. So, Joran Jenkins, I want to thank you for being on The Law Entrepreneur today, and I wish you the best of luck going forward, and we'll be looking forward to talking to you again real soon.
Neil, it's been a joy.
Thank you. Once again, I'd like to thank our friends at Market Circle, the makers of Daylight and Spotlight Branding, for being sponsors of today's podcast. Market Circles, as the makers of Daylight, provide the tool that I use to manage my cases, my clients, my calendar, my to-dos, the emails, and they do so all in one app that stays with me on my Mac, my iPhone, and my iPad. I use Daylight on my own in a solo environment, but you can also use it in a team. You can use Daylight to track the status of cases and delegate tasks to one another on your team, and you can see everyone's schedule all without having to interrupt anyone. Daylight is one of the tools that I use to stay organized, and it increases my efficiency, and therefore it only stands to reason that it'll do the same for you and your team if you use it in a broader environment. So visit marketcircle.com/daylight to try Daylight free for 30 days. And be sure to let them know that you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur in order to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. Also, our friends at Spotlight Branding, as always, have been very helpful in sponsoring this podcast. You know, I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They built a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to help keep me top of mind with my referral network. So visit www.spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur. So spotlightbranding.com/TLE to access your free gift. And as always, make sure that you visit our website, www.thelawentrepreneur.com, to see everything that's going on with the podcast and subscribe to our newsletter so that you can stay in the know and be the first on your block, so to speak, to gain insight into what's going on here. So once again, thanks for being here this time around. I appreciate your listenership. Hope to see you again next week on The Law Entrepreneur.